Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Welcome back to another Baseball America podcast. We're talking Minnesota Twins top 30. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is JJ Cooper, who does our Twins top 30 list. JJ, how's it going? Are you ready to talk about a talented twin system?
Good to see you, Jeff. I feel like we've been hanging out a lot virtually last few weeks doing these deep dives. But today's going to be one of the fun ones because, I mean, there are some organizations, some systems we do, we're like, not a lot at the top. There's a lot at the top here, obviously, with the Twins, one of the best prospects in the game. And then on top of that, I think there's a lot of kind of very interesting guys beyond that that'll be worth talking about.
Yeah, so let's sort of get right into it in terms of one of the top prospects on our top 100 list. One of the top high school players, I think, that's probably been drafted out of the last two or three classes in Walker Jenkins, you know, kind of native to you out there in the Carolinas. Is he the best prospect the Twins have had since Byron Buxton?
Yes. Like, if you go by our top 100, yes, we have Jenkins at number 5 on our top 100, was number 4 before Roki Sasaki signed. And that makes him the third highest rated prospect in Twins top 100 history. Top 100 goes back to 1990. Now, there are multiple entries for that. Joe Mauer was a 2-time number 1 and also number 4. Hall of Famer Joe Mauer. So that one went well. Byron Buxton was number 1 1 year and 2 2 other years. So that Byron Buxton, Joe Mauer, both ranked higher than Jenkins. Jenkins is the next best. Francisco Liriano ranks 6th. So he moves ahead of Francisco Liriano to be the third highest ranked prospect in Twins top 100 history, which basically is now the last 35 years.
So let's talk a little bit about the player that Walker Jenkins is. You know, highly touted for the combination of hit and power coming out of high school. We've certainly seen the hit since he's been a professional. I think he's gotten better reports in terms of his defense and, you know, kind of how he rates as an athlete. Talk to me a little bit about the power development and how much power do you think develops there? Or have you sort of adjusted how you view that profile with Jenkins?
I would say it's hard not to think of Joe Mauer when we talk about this because their swings are pretty similar, to be honest. They're both, you know, they're both big lefties. Obviously, Jenkins, I can't even say he's a better athlete. I do want to remind people that Joe Mauer could have gone to college to play quarterback at FSU. Really good two-sport guy himself. But when you talk about Jenkins, you know, Mauer was a catcher and Jenkins is a center fielder who very well could end up in right. But I don't feel like we've seen so far in pro ball. I think we're still kind of scratching the surface for Jenkins. Not that we haven't seen some really good highlights, but the question you would have right now is he has had some injury issues, some of which I would say you don't worry about them being kind of long-term injuries. But like in high school, like that final draft year, the showcase year, had a hand injury that kind of limited him. You know, he had a quad injury in 24 that really kind of slowed his kind of start of his season, kind of slowed him down. And then he did kind of make up for that lost time. He did get to AA at the end of the year. But I would say if you looked at the 2024 season and you said, I don't want to is that all there is? You would say like, there's a better season in the future for Walker Jenkins. This is not kind of the full picture of what we expect Walker Jenkins to be. But to hit on your main point, the way he hits right now, I would say it's hit over power. And then the question, this is why I bring up Maurer. Maurer, the question always was, it's hit over power, but will the power develop? And we saw like a little spike of it, but for the majority of Joe Maurer's career in a different era, it was a hitter. He was a hitter who could, you know, win batting titles, could get on base, but you weren't going to get that 25, 30 home runs a year from Joe Maurer. Walker Jenkins has that in him. Now the question becomes, is that where he wants to go? Is that where the Twins want him to go? But the other thing, and this is kind of, I'll kick it back to you. The other thing that just stands out to me about that is I do feel also that we're in a very different era now. Like, I'm not saying that all swings are completely malleable and you just can completely change a guy overnight or anything like that. But I do feel like that we are now in an era where there's more ability to tweak, more ability to refine, where you're like, hey, try this and get a little bit faster feedback loop now, where if really the goal long term is, hey, we just want you to get, you know, can we figure out a way to get that ball a little bit further out front? Or can we figure out a way where your swing is going to be a little bit more, having already gone through, and now you're kind of basically driving the ball in the air more often? There are ways to do that now. I would say that it's not crazy to think someone is big and strong with the bat speed, all of those kind of components that Walker Jenkins has, could end up hitting for a lot more power than what we've seen so far. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think when you sort of look at it, there's like this narrative that he doesn't hit the ball hard. You know, he had like a 102.1 mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity, still 19 years old, was playing in probably two of the harder power environments in the minors, in the Florida State League and the Midwest League, though he did play in the Midwest League when it was a little bit warmer. Still not the easiest place to hit for power. It's not playing in the Cal League or the Northwest League or, you know, certainly the Texas League or the AAA leagues where the ball seems to sort of fly at those levels.
Or the big leagues.
Yeah. I feel like there is enough growth there and there's enough underlying data that, you know, he's maybe not a 30 home run guy. I don't know if that's in there. We had maybe talked about him that way. Maybe he gets there. But I think if you settle in like low 20s with a high batting average, lots of doubles, some triples, and like, you know, a guy who could slug 500, I think he's certainly in line with that when you consider how good of a hitter he is. And, you know, it's a line that Roman Anthony had said to me when I interviewed him before the season. It's something that's really stuck with me. Toward the end of the season, it's something that stuck with me throughout the offseason. And that's, you know, he considered himself a hitter with power. I think that's a perfect way to sort of describe Jenkins, is a hitter with power and not just a power hitter.
And that's actually, I would say with that, now again, to take another example of a guy, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hits the ball as hard as anybody, but for the totality of his pro career, he's kind of always kind of flirted on that line between the really hard struck ground ball, which is nice, but that's a single, and hitting for power. You know, Junior Caminero is another guy I would throw in there, like who kind of, I've personally witnessed Junior Caminero hit a ball like 115 plus that like just stayed. Like line drive that hit the blue monster in Durham. And it's like, I don't think that ball was ever, I think that the shortstop almost could have caught it and it hit the blue monster in the air. Like you don't see that kind of thing, but these kind of like these guys who hit the ball really hard, but their swing's just a little bit more geared towards line drives. That could be Jenkins. But as you said, like that's kind of, even if that's him, that's a really good player. Guy who hits for average, gets on base, does not swing and miss. For a guy as big as he is, he has really good contact skills. That version of him is still a really good player. Again, he's not a catcher, but if he's, oh no, he could be kind of that Joe Maurer trajectory of hit for average, get on base, win batting titles, and hit for modest power. You'll take it. But at the same time, if you told me that Jenkins had those years where it kind of blossoms and he ends up having those 30 home run years, also not crazy at all, especially as you said, like far down in the future when he's like 26 or 27 years old in the 2030s.
Yeah. And I think, as we move on here to the number two prospect, I don't think anybody would debate that this guy is a power hitter. Of course, we're talking about outfielder Emmanuel Rodriguez. He is a power hitter. He is not a hitter with power, but also has outlier plate discipline. One of the most patient hitters in pro baseball. And I think when you sort of dig into swing rate and you look at that in contrast to chase rate, he's not as passive as you think. He just never chases. I mean, it's one of the lowest chase races in the chase rate.
He's as picky as they come.
Yeah. And I think for good reason. He has a lot of swing and miss. There's absolutely some holes in his swing, and he's not the biggest guy, but he swings big. There's a ton of bat speed. He creates a ton of torque with that swing and the ability to just, you know, put up outlier exit velocities that rival the James Woods, the Gunnar Hendersons, the Junior Cameron Arrows, the guys that have put up those really big exit velocity numbers. But I think people sort of look at him as like maybe he's this true outcome guy, and a lot of those guys often are positionless. He's got center field skills. He's pretty good out there. Runs pretty well. Really, the biggest issue with him has been injuries. Now, we get a full season of Emmanuel Rodriguez this year. Do you think he could pass Walker Jenkins? That's if he doesn't graduate. Do you think he could pass Walker Jenkins as maybe the Twins' number one prospect if he does put up that outlier year and, you know, hits 35 home runs in AAA or something?
I would say probably not for what you just said. The year in which Emmanuel Rodriguez puts it all together to where he could make the case to be number one, he probably graduates, right? He has, you know, he's going to start the year at AAA. It's kind of hard for me to envision him having a minor league player of the year caliber season, which you probably are going to need to beat out. Because Walker Jenkins could, like, if we're handicapping our 2025 minor league player of the year for all of the minors, Walker Jenkins is very high up as a candidate on that. If Emmanuel Rodriguez did that, Jenkins is going to start the year having just reached AA. Going to start the year at AA, could make it to AAA. Maybe he makes it to the majors by the end of the year. Manny Rodriguez is starting the year at AAA. If he has a first half like we're talking about, at some point he's knocking down the door, right? Like, he will be 8 miles basically from target field. At some point he'll hit a ball and it's like, oh wait, what, that rolled into the stadium. Okay, it's time to bring him up, you know, like that kind of thing where you hit on it. We just haven't seen him. There's been hand and knee injuries that have kind of plagued the entirety almost of his pro career, right? Like, you go back to the pandemic year, you go to 22, 23, 24. There is hope. He did have, you know, like, there's hope that they've cleared up the hand issue, that there was a little something chronic there that's always kind of bothered him. Hopefully that's cleared up. The knee, that's a bigger question, you know, because that's, again, knee injuries are often ones that are kind of, there's chain to that, right? Like, he's had abdomen injury. Like, there's a lot of different things here, but nothing where you're like, oh, it's a back injury, there's no hope for him or anything like that. And as you said, whenever he plays exceptionally well. And I can't help but think, these two are kind of really perfectly kind of positioned together coming up, because they're both outfielders, but they do, and they're both really good. They're both elite prospects who do it very differently, right? Like, you just laid it out. With Jenkins, we would be stunned if Walker Jenkins, like, if you asked me, like, how does it go poorly for Walker Jenkins? What does a disappointing next 5 years for Walker Jenkins look like? I would say the power never develops. You know, he had 6 homers last year. Okay, that's his number, right? He hit 6 to 10. And we go, how does Walker Jenkins not hit more home runs than that? And then you say, okay, his hit tool, he's a 280 hitter. He's a 270 hitter. 270 with, let's say, 6 to 10 homers. You'd be like, oh, is that all there is? Like, you would want more than that. You would say, man, that's a little bit disappointing, but that's still a regular. That's probably still a, you know, player who plays every day. But you pair that, like, that's kind of the worst case scenario of him. With Emmanuel Rodriguez, the worst case scenario is a guy who I would say gets beat in the zone by quality major league pitchers. However, he's gonna walk. Like, there's almost no scenario where his on-base percentage, he could hit 215, 220, and he's going to get on base, because the skills that he has at taking pitches, the utter belief in himself of like, nope, that is not a pitch for me to swing at, and to take it on 1-2 and trust that big league umpires will get it right, he's going to draw his walks. And if you, even big league pitchers make mistakes, and if you make a mistake in the zone to Emmanuel Rodriguez, he can hit the ball 400, 420, 430, 440. So like the best case scenario of these guys is we just laid out is Walker Jenkins, the power comes. And so he hits 300 plus in his best years with 25 plus bombs. The best version of Emmanuel Rodriguez is it's kind of Juan Soto light, I should say. You know, like it's, no one's Juan Soto. At the age that Emmanuel Rodriguez was, Juan Soto was already one of the best hitters in the major leagues, right? But if you said like, well, what's this look like? It's 400 plus OBPs with a 500 slugging. And that's kind of that's a great combo.
Absolutely. I think he's one of the more fascinating players, depending upon what front office you talk to and kind of chat about their analytical model. I mean, I've heard, and I've said this before in other shows, that Rodriguez was, you know, ranked as high as third or fourth overall in the minors. So, you know, I think the way that WAR at least publicly really values walks and the ability to get on base kind of supplements some of those hit tool concerns that he has, because it's just so outlier. Plus he has this outlier power and, you know, some defensive ability.
That's the thing. The key thing when we say that he's going to walk, there are guys who are like, they have great on base percentages in the minors, but they're not necessarily going to walk in the majors, because if that's all you do in the minors, the big league pitchers are like, come get me. Mike O'Neill, I always use the example, the Cardinals outfielder from a decade ago, right? Who put up these like 440, 450 on base percentages in the minors, but he also slugged like 360. And as he climbed the ladder, they're like, oh, it's 2-0. I'm just throwing it straight down the middle. Here's a cookie. See if you, and he couldn't do anything with it. Emmanuel Rodriguez is never going to have that problem, because if you hit the ball, you know, in those Ohtani, Judge, Stanton level EVs, you know, you're going to put some fear in pitchers where you get behind, you know, if the pitcher's down 2-0, he's not just putting a fastball straight down the middle, just saying, see what you can do. Because what Emmanuel Rodriguez can do is hit a monster homer off of it.
Yeah. And I think if you look at like rates, like heart swing, he's still like a 71, 72% heart swing guy. So it's not like he's taken that many pitches in the zone or down the middle of the plate, frankly. You know, he's swinging at a majority of those. And I would imagine if we broke it down to like two strike heart swing, he's probably swinging at like 85 to 90% of those, which is perfectly good.
If you're watching this on YouTube, you're going to be seeing a graphic of this while we do this, because I haven't worked it up yet, but I will work it up from Synergy before we do this, because that is a perfect example of it. Yes. Is like when I've looked at it before, it just stands out. Like, again, he knows the zone, and it's not like he can be beaten in the zone. It's no question. Like, this is not, like when we talk about Walker Jenkins, again, these are kind of the yin and yang of each other. Walker Jenkins is a guy with this really pretty special bat to ball skill, right? It's really hard to beat him in the zone consistently. You can do that with Emmanuel Rodriguez, but the flip side of that is you have to be in the zone and you have to hit your spot. And if you don't hit your spot, bad things are going to happen for you as a pitcher. And Emmanuel Rodriguez has done that consistently.
100%. We got some more questions here, but before we jump into the second half of this podcast, why don't we take a quick break? We'll be right back.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
All right. And we are back talking Twin System, Jeff Ponce, JJ Cooper here on the Baseball America podcast. JJ, let's talk a little bit about big picture stuff here with Twin System. You know, one of the things that we've talked about a little bit when we've discussed this system in particular is some of the depth. And I know it's something that you've called out. You do like the Twins depth. Talk to me about what that depth entails. Is it one positional group? Do you feel it's pretty well balanced between pitching, infielders, outfielders, some catchers? You know, what do Twins fans have to look forward to in terms of what's coming up here through the pipeline?
So I'm going to start with almost a riddle, right? Which is there's two kinds of depth. There's the kind of depth that everyone, that not everyone has. Some teams don't have it. The Angels didn't have it last year, right? The Angels had times last year where you're like, I mean, there was documented stories of players who were planning to retire and go into coaching. And then the phone rings and the Angels are like, hey, you want to play for our Triple-A team? Okay, no one else was interested, but and they're playing in the big leagues before long, right? Like you can have that kind of, but most teams go beyond that, right? And what I mean by that is the Twins, they've had a lot of that kind of depth, which is not that valuable at the end of the day. What I mean by that is the guy who's the fringe of the 40-man roster type guy. Junior Severino had a great year in AAA a couple of years ago for the Twins, but it's not like ever turned into big league time. Chris Williams, who I liked at one point, but the catcher from Clemson, first baseman, you know, these guys who can put up good numbers in AAA, but the phone, you know, like they're that fringe of the 40-man roster type. That kind of depth doesn't have that much value at the end of the day. Kind of hope, you know, like for him, like that Deshaun Kiersey might be a better version of that. You know, he might be above that level, but like Michael Hellman, who the Twins have had, guys like that, where you're like, they're option six on the depth chart, you know, in a lot of positions. But what the Twins have now, I would say, that goes beyond that is like depth of guys at the upper levels of the minors who you might have to figure out a spot for. I mean, I just did a story. We're recording this right after Bregman signed with the Red Sox. And like the Red Sox now have multiple positions where you're like, okay, so let's imagine a catastrophic year. And so your number one option at this position goes down. It's like, okay, that's fine. We've got this guy. And then that guy, okay, we got this guy. Oh, that guy goes down. Then we got this guy. Well, like the Twins right now, like if you said, okay, let's just take second base, for example, right? And you said, so what does the Twins' second base situation look like? So let's start by saying, okay, Edouard Julian, who had a good year 2 years ago, not so good a year last year. He's a candidate at second base. Okay. Then you could say, well, Willy Castro is probably going to play everywhere, but if they needed to, you could say that Willy Castro is going to primarily play second base. And then you say, well, Brooks Lee's got to play somewhere. And if Correa is healthy and Royce Lewis is healthy, he probably most fits at second base. And you said, okay, that's pretty good depth. And then you said, well, but let's imagine Carlos Correa gets hurt. So let's imagine that Brooks Lee has to play short. So let's take Brooks Lee out of second base. And you say, well, Luke Kuechel is coming back from Tommy John surgery, but should be ready to go. And that's the guy who's going to be at AAA, and he could be ready to step in and play second base. Okay, let's say truly catastrophe strikes, and we've now already listed like 4 or 5 options. Well, Austin Martin is on this team, and Austin Martin can play second base. But no, not enough. I want to hear more. Well, what about Peyton Eales, who finished last year in AAA and can play second base? That's the kind of talk. And when I talk about most of those guys at second base, a lot of these guys at least are plausible at shortstop as well. Brooks Lee, most notably. I don't think Royce Lewis is going to play it anymore, but Royce Lewis has played it. When we talk about third base, a lot of these same names with Royce Lewis probably is the primary choice, but throw Jose Miranda in there who had a solid year last year, who could also play first base. It becomes part of that first base option. And then we go to the outfield, and, you know, we do have guys who've been there. We've got Buxton, who you kind of, you know, you know that you're going to have some injuries during the year, but you got Buxton. You got Willie Castro's played out there. You've got Matt Wallner, who kind of had a solid year. You've got Harrison Bader, who they just signed. You've got Larnach. And then, as we just mentioned, you're going to have Emmanuel Rodriguez at AAA, and you're going to have Walker Jenkins at AA. So that's real depth, right? That's like guys where you're like, at some point you hope this year that Emmanuel Rodriguez is playing so well that you've got a clear room, right? Like that you're not just going to be saying, well, you know, that's okay, he's having a nice year. No, you're hoping that at some point this year you say, we've got to figure out a spot for him, much as they've had to do with Royce Lewis and Brooks Lee in recent years. But so that's real depth to me. And then we look on the pitching side, and they really kind of got tested on that like last year, because all the guys who went down meant that all these rookies had to pitch for them. And in some cases, I would say they probably a little bit before, you know, I think Zebby Matthews kind of could use a little bit more time in AAA, but you do have like Zebby Matthews. You've got, you know, at this point, Marco Raya is on the, you know, is not that far away. Andrew Morris, you've got I can't help but talk about Connor Prelip, who you can't count on him at this point. Let's just be honest about that. Like counting on him as like, we're going to write him in pen would be asking too much for a guy who has had about this long of help since the pandemic. I mean, because literally it was like, he came back from the pandemic and then his elbow, and then he had surgery, and then he came back from that. And it's like, wow, this looks great. And it's like, uh-oh, he had to have surgery again. But he did come back last year, looked really good late in the season in a very limited role. But if you told me that Connor Prelip pitched well in the big leagues this year, wouldn't stun me, would not floor me. And then he got the CJ Culpeppers, and you've got, you know, the Corey Lewis's with his knuckleball. You've got, what I mean is, you got a lot of guys here. And then beyond that, lower down, I want to ask you about him too, because like, I think that he's kind of a guy who fascinates me. I like Kalen Culpepper, their draft pick from last year, Kyle DeBarge, Billy Amick to some extent. But the one that really, like, I'm really intrigued what it's going to end up being is Brandon Winokur, who, when he was drafted, it was like, he could be a shortstop, but no, he's not going to be a shortstop. He's kind of O'Neill Cruz size almost. He could be a third baseman. He could be a center fielder. He's still not going to be a shortstop. He was better there, though, last year than I would expect. And the strikeouts were better. I expected, the way I'd put it, Jeff, is if you told me that the White Sox prospect George Walkow and Brandon Winokur kind of had similar profiles, I'd have been like, yeah, that makes sense to me. No, Winokur was way better bat to ball skills than that. Like there's some real long-term power potential here. There's a great arm. There's athleticism. And I mean, there's still risk. There is some real risk here. Big dude, long levers and all that. But it really impressed me what he did last year. And if you told me, especially you got to remember, you talked about how tough the FSL is. He was in the FSL last year. His numbers, when you consider it was the FSL, are really pretty good. And I'm much more encouraged about him now than I was intrigued when he was drafted. I would say that I'm much more encouraged now. And I think like, oh, the hitting ability may be better than what I would expect. And like the way I'll summarize like how the FSL makes it hard to see that. He slugged 434. He ranked third in the league with a 434 slugging percentage. It's really hard to hit in that league.
Yeah, I think 100%. But I think you brought up, you know, there's a lot of interesting names. You have the outfielders up top. I think even Luke Kuechel could play some outfield potentially. I've seen it before. Yeah. Well, some infield. Then they kind of have this depth of pitchers. You went through some of the names, Zebby Matthews, Connor Prelip, who from a talent perspective, I think is very intriguing. I know Dylan and I have talked about him from a fantasy perspective a little bit this year as maybe somebody you could chase that has some upside. you know, despite all the question marks, he's a lot easier to roster in a fantasy league than he is if you're a real life team and you got to worry about all the injuries, or you're a fan of the team and you got to worry about all the injuries, because you can just drop him out into the ether of, you know, the waiver wire. But even beyond that, Marco Raya, Charlie Soto, who they took in the first round a couple years ago, Andrew Morris is interesting, CJ Culpepper is interesting, you know, Desaun Hill, who they took this year. I know that you had a pretty solid grade on a 55 extreme. Then you start to go down and, you know, there is some infield depth here, but not necessarily any, you know, maybe Winokur, if everything comes together, has really big ceiling, but a pretty low floor. There are a lot of high floor infielders. It does feel like there is some organizational depth and you can kind of pick your flavor in here through the top 20. That being said, let's dive into a little bit of, you know, the current situation with the major league team. Do you feel that they're a little stuck right now? You have a Tigers organization that's really surged, I think, in the last couple of years since management has changed over. You know, they have made the playoffs last year, certainly have playoff aspirations, and maybe more as the years come. The Guardians were one of the best teams in baseball for a good chunk of last season. Showed fairly well in the playoffs. Obviously, couldn't close the deal. But, you know, a good organization, and one that I think, you know, despite some of their restraints in terms of spending, is still focused on competing and being a championship caliber team eventually. You know, and then you sort of have the bottom of that division. But
you had three teams from the this division made the playoffs last year, and the Twins weren't one of them. Yeah. So, you know, the White Sox right now are the bottom, but then the Twins can't say the right now that they're ahead of – they can't say they're ahead of the Royals. Royals went to the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and I was about to say that. The Royals, you know, certainly have a really nice young core led by one of the best young superstars in baseball and Bobby Witt Jr. You could say that they maybe overachieved a little bit last year just based on what their roster is. Haven't really supplemented that team a whole lot. I think for a lot of people, and I haven't looked at the betting odds, I would imagine the Twins probably have a better playoff percentage than the Royals do at this point. How do they get over this hump? Because in a lot of ways, I've always felt like this should be sort of the giant of this division, with the struggles the Tigers had for the better part of a decade, you know, what the restraints are on the Guardians, and, you know, how bad the White Sox have been, you know, and just, you know, the Royals in general, like I said, haven't necessarily gone out and spent a lot. They don't have a terribly deep system. How do they take that next step forward that they're back in the playoffs and, you know, potentially making a championship series, which I think if you're a Twins fan, that would probably be a pretty good outcome.
I would say the thing that really hurt the Twins, this is going to sound weird to say, it's great to spend money. The Twins did that, right? But you need to be, I think what really can harm organizational direction, you need, this is something, it's not just the Twins. You see this a lot, happen a lot, right? You want a consistency of spending. The Twins had this little stretch there post-pandemic where the Twins signed Carlos Correa. Now, they took advantage of the fact that Correa seemed like damaged goods somewhat. You know, there were other teams who backed out, who actually, you know, Carlos Correa had a deal and then ended up back on the market. But okay, adding Correa, and I would say if you look at it right now, like, I know he's had plantar fasciitis and he's missed some time, but Carlos Correa has been really good for the Twins. But they signed Correa, they extended Buxton, two injury-prone players, but that's fine. The problem is they kind of hit a peak water, like they reached a new water level as far as contracts, and then they pulled back from it, right? And so in that case, I kind of think, would they have been better off, hey, sorry, we're not going to go to 150 plus. We're going to stay in this $130 million range because, or again, the better version of it would have been, no, we're not going to let you go to 150, but we'll let you go to 140 for the next 5 years. Or 140, then 145, then 150. When you pull back like that, but you've already spent money, I think it puts you in a tougher situation than, you know, again, you want some consistency to this. When you see the teams that do this, where it's like a, you go in and then you pull back on the revenue, on the, what the contract. And again, I know that the Twins are one of multiple teams that all of a sudden their TV money became a lot shakier than it was before. I get that. But like, you do look at that and I say, like, that kind of ended up being a problem for them. And that's kind of led to, and they've, I know they've made a couple moves here recently, but it was, again, as someone who follows a lot of Twins fans and, you know, and tries to keep attention to it because I write the Twins for us, there was a lot of anger last offseason, I felt like, that could best be summarized as, yes, you have the highest payroll in the division, which admittedly is the AL Central, but we're angry that you're now pulling back from where you were before, even if you're still going to have the highest or one of the highest payrolls in the division. And that really comes back to, like, when you raise the expectations like they did. And by the way, they had a stretch there. They were, I mean, they won a playoff series for the first time in a very long time. So when you do that, it felt like, I think, like, for the Twins fans, it's like, look at this. It's all here for the taking. The system's good. There's depth. And then it wasn't something, you know, not only was it not, we're going to retain the free agents who are hitting free agency, we're not going to really make a whole lot of other moves. Oh, we're going to make moves that are not now kind of about trying to cut payroll a little bit. And here's this, what they still kind of sit. And again, the funny thing about that is, if you look at kind of the history of Twins payroll, they've just kind of generally sat, like, it is the, you take the Dodgers and the Yankees and all this out of it, there's this mass of teams that are still spending about the same amount as they were pre-pandemic, right? And the Twins are one of those, with the exception of that little blip. And I do think that that's kind of caused them issues, because they really, like last year, like, they didn't make the playoffs. They were one pitcher short, I would say. Like, if they had, they did not miss it by a ton, but at the end of the year, Simeon Woods Richardson was utterly out of gas. Zebby Matthews was being put into a situation beyond what he could do. Maybe they were two pitchers short, because they didn't really bulk up the bullpen either. And there were scenarios, there were situations late in the season where they were putting players plucked off of waivers into high leverage situations because they didn't have any other choices, they felt like. All that came together, it ends up being a disappointing season. Now, I still think they're actually reasonably well positioned. When we talk about what they have coming up in the minors and all, it would not shock me at all to see the Twins be back as one of the teams to beat in the AL Central this year. I mean, you got to put the Guardians there. You got to put the Tigers in there. You at least got to include the Royals, because, again, the Royals, you know, were in the playoffs last year. The Twins weren't. We all know that the White Sox aren't going to be part of this. We can, it's those four. But it does feel like, you know, again, that two steps forward, one step back approach can kind of make it hard for a team to act cohesively, I guess is the way I would put it. Because I would say that there are contracts now, like, if you have Carlos Correa on that deal, it's a fine deal to have. The Byron Buxton extension is a fine deal to have, but it makes a whole lot more sense on a team that's spending $155 million, $160 million, than it does on a team whose opening day payroll will be probably $20 million less than that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, and I think that some of it too has been the amount of injuries they've had to guys like Royce Lewis too, in addition to Buxton and Correa. It's just a very injury-plagued organization. It's why I look at a guy like Emmanuel Rodriguez and think, you know, the corner outfielders here are Matt Wallner, who I like Matt Wallner when he's on. No one likes Matt Wallner when he's off. It's like Jekyll and Hyde kind of seasons. Larnick has never really gotten to the point we thought he was going to get to. And it's like, it's not a shock if it's either. And then you have Buxton, you know, injuries or underperformance. It's really only Harrison Bader that's standing in his way. And if there's two injuries, then all of a sudden you have a guy
who's
yeah, multiple, but he's on the 40-man roster, and they've already used options on Rodriguez. So I think we also know that that could.
Yeah, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Luke Kuechel. But by the way, this is the frightening thing, that if we do lay out, though, with this Twins, top of this Twins list, Walker Jenkins, as we said, has had injuries in multiple years. Emmanuel Rodriguez has had an injury pretty much every year. Yeah. Luke Kuechel missed the second half of last year with Tommy John surgery. Connor Prelip, last fully healthy year was like 2019, I want to say. You know, we could go down the list. There are other guys on here you could throw that way too. There are a lot of guys we're talking about in the minor leagues also that you could say, like, hey, they're really kind of hopeful on this guy. That goes with Brooks Lee's had back injuries going back to his draft, you know, pre-draft days, you know, in college. You said Royce Lewis has had significant knee injuries. He's missed, you know, two significant knee injuries. He's missed time in, like, you know, significant time in multiple years. Yeah, this is a team. Carlos Correa has had foot problems. Carlos Correa could not get a contract, you know, signed, you know, with other teams in that offseason where he signed with the Twins. Then, you know, for 1 year and then ended up back with that. Like, yeah, this is Byron Buxton. The next fully healthy Byron Buxton season may be the first fully healthy. Joe Ryan, you know, missed time last year. Yeah, like that's the big thing that could utterly derail the Twins is if they had seven or eight guys miss time with injuries this year, you would say, yeah, that's not outside of character for these players. They need to have a lot of depth because a lot of these guys are likely to miss some time.
Well, we're getting to the end of the show here. Sort of the last question we always throw out here. And I personally think this is my favorite part of each episode that we do. We're going to go through all 30 teams. You can go back into your Baseball America podcast feed. If you've missed any teams, go and check it out. We got some more coming as well. But
and the playlist on YouTube, we have a playlist for all of these farm system deep dives too.
Well, if you're on YouTube, you should be seeing all that, right? Yes. And you can set up the notification so it pings to your phone when they go live. But my favorite question, give me a prospect here outside of the top 10 that you're excited about or maybe getting great feedback on. Who's the name that Twins fans should know outside of this top 10?
This, again, this is a good system this way. Like there's probably five or six guys. I'll limit it to two, right? Mentioned Peyton Neils before. We don't know what Peyton Neils is going to be long-term. This is a guy who literally was unsigned during spring training last year. Goes to, you know, is in the Atlantic League. Gets signed by the Twins. They just are filling a roster spot in A-ball, right? Destroys A-ball, gets promoted double A, destroys it, goes to triple A, spends half the year in triple A, and has a great year at St. Paul. He is a 5'5" second baseman who can play short, who can run, who has good plate discipline, good bat to ball skills. It's, I would say at this point, it's more likely than not that he is a big leaguer. And that is significant for a guy who at this time last year couldn't get a contract. Like in 1 year to go from why will no one give me a chance to, hey, I'm in AAA. I had a good year at AAA. I could get the call this year. That's an amazing development. But at the same time, we want to see, okay, what do you do as an encore? Because was last year a magical year? Can you build on that? Or is that the high watermark? So that's one. The other one I mentioned is Iverson Castellano. And I'm teeing this up for you, Jeff, because this is Rule 5 fever for both of us. Castellano was a Rule 5 pick. He was, I would say, we would consider him one of the more intriguing, more surprising names to see available in the Rule 5 draft, because most of the pitchers who are available in the Rule 5 draft either are coming off of bad years, coming off of injury, or lack stuff. In Castellano's case, he has stuff. He's coming off of a good year. He has had injuries that, you know, Pat, you know, all of this was like his resume last year was pretty impeccable. He was the Phillies organizational pitcher of the year. He had the most strikeouts in the Phillies system. He got to double A. It would not stun me at all to see Castellano stick with the Twins. And that's a name to kind of file away because, you know, again, there's real stuff here. This is not a guy where you're like, okay, yeah, he could make it, but it's never going to matter. I think, you know, what do you think, Jeff? Like you've done a lot of digging on him. Like, I think that there's a chance that this guy could be actually a useful long-term pitcher for the Twins.
Yeah. You know, he was kind of a surprise one to me because even if he's not protected in, you know, on the 40-man roster, you know, the declaration day seemed like somebody that might get traded right beforehand or, you know, potentially, you know, even after and then added to the 40-man roster for another team that had, you know, a spot available. That didn't come to fruition. He was a name that we consistently heard throughout our work too, that he's going to probably go, no matter what organization we were speaking with, and, you know, just the work that they were doing, analysts, scouts, it seemed like anybody who covered the Phillies was like, yeah, I think Castellanos is probably going to go. So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. He's got starter traits too. Like, that's not typically something you see in the Rule 5 draft either, is guys who are available that, you know, potentially could be starters. You know, we saw this with Mitch Spence last year with the A's, who had a pretty good year for a guy who was unprotected, selected in the Rule 5 draft. Obviously, the Athletics have some spots available. You know, the last couple of years, they've been able to pluck guys in the Rule 5 draft and keep them in the organization. Different expectations here with the Twins, but just the nature of pitching, and I think you really have to go into spring training with 8 viable starting options in the big league rotation at some point in the season, even if the last few guys are more triple-A type of arms, or a long man that you can stretch out. And I think he probably fits into that pretty well. It'll be interesting to see what he's like in camp and if he does get an opportunity. I don't know if he's going to crack the rotation, but could get, like I said, a long man, and then he's the next man up if Patton goes down or somebody like that.
Right. Like, he, in an ideal world to me, what he could be this year is the guy who, yeah, he can give you multiple innings when you need it. And then if you're like, hey, you know, we want to get this, we want to give Simeon Wood Richardson a skip a start, right? We're trying to get him to the end of the season. Last year, it kind of backed up. Okay. We're going to give Castellano the ball. And by the way, this is a good matchup for him. You know, we're only looking for 4 innings. Go do it. That kind of thing.
Yeah, and he could even be a bulk guy in a bullpen game. There's a lot of ways that bullpens are utilized these days.
100%.
But some really interesting names there. I know you did a blind breakdown of 3 similar players. Peyton Neal's happened to be one of them. I won't say who the other 2 are. Go on to baseball.
Player A, player B, and player C. Go check that out at baseballamerica.com. I think you will enjoy it, because we're giving you all the details to try to line up how you would prefer to pick them.
It was a really fun article, and I think got a lot of good feedback. And you know, some of the chats and channels and et cetera that I'm in to chat baseball, because I'm always doing that all the time. But, you know, if you like this video on YouTube, you know, and you're not subscribed to the Baseball America channel, please do that. Drop us a like. That helps us, you know, get up there and get out there to more people that are baseball fans and kind of spread the message and the gospel. If you're not subscribed to baseballamerica.com, now is a great time to do so. We have all the top 30s up there. If you're a dynasty or fantasy player, we have lots of rankings, lots of supplemental content and sleepers, breakdowns, players to avoid, as well as all the college baseball content that's going to be rolling out now that college baseball season is upon us. So dig into that, the draft, everything else. And if you're on podcasts, listen to this on Apple Podcasts, etc. Light, rate, subscribe. That helps us out as well. And once again, this has been the Baseball America podcast. For Jeff Ponce, for JJ Cooper, thanks for tuning in.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night: cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.